Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Drew. 35, 30.
Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com alongside Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Good to be with you for the next 16 minutes. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get into a number of different topics over the next 60 minutes. We'll also get to your phone calls and your tweets. Jim Thomas from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch will be joining us momentarily. He has covered the St. Louis Rams, who are now obviously moving to Los Angeles, but he has covered Janoris Jenkins. So we'll get some insight on what Jenkins is going to bring to the Giants and what he did with his days with the Rams. So that is something that we're certainly looking forward to. Things have quieted down on the free agency front, Paul, which is understandable, but we're closing in on a month away from the draft before you know it.
Yeah, the draft is April 28th, for those of you who have been under a rock for the last several months. We are certainly looking forward to that very much. And basically now we are in the second phase of free agency, where guys who, you know, may not want to be part of that discount rack are finding themselves part of the discount rack reluctantly. Guys who are still hoping that they can get, shall we say, first-round free agent money, for lack of a better term, and they're finding out that teams are kind of holding their horses just a little bit, and they're not giving out those boatloads of money anymore because the first wave of free agency is gone. The high-priced ticket guys are virtually all gone. A few guys who still have that kind of thought process about themselves are out there, and what they're basically finding out, the Ryan Fitzpatricks of the world, that even though you started last year and you won a lot of games and you put up good numbers, people aren't necessarily willing to back up the Brinks truck for you quite yet. The desperation maybe hasn't quite set in. So there are guys who, again, part of that second tier of free agency, who still think they belong in the first tier of money. And that's where we are now. We're at a stalemate where free agent signings have kind of creeped to a crawl because you've got teams and players playing chicken.
And with the draft on the horizon, I think a lot of teams are also shifting their focus there. Instead of maybe bringing in a veteran, if we get younger and we're high on a prospect, you know, maybe there's a little bit more value in bringing in some youth as opposed to settling for a veteran who maybe you could bring in even after the draft into your team as opposed to doing it now.
Well, see, some teams will tell some of these veterans, hey, you know what, put your phone on hold because we think we're interested in you, but we'd like to see how we can do in the draft to maybe get a younger player at your position, and maybe we're going to fill it that way. But, you know, sit by your phone. You know, we might give you a call after the draft, after we see where we're standing. But of course, there's a danger in that because what if he jumps and decides that he's going to sign with somebody? So what you're banking on when you do that is that nobody else is going to pull the trigger and grab the guy first. Now, there are other teams who will tell a guy, we're interested in you, but, you know, we're not quite liking the price right now. We'll get back to you maybe before the draft and see where things stand. Now, of course, that gives the leverage to the player because now the player's saying, you guys have a hole at my position and you'd like to fill it before you go into the draft, so that you don't have to worry about drafting that position. So now I've got the leverage, and maybe I can get a little more money out of you than maybe you want to pay. And that's the kind of gamesmanship that's going on right now. So I do suspect that you'll see a few more free agents sign over the course of the next couple of weeks. I do think that's going to happen. Just a few. And the bulk of these guys are probably going to have to wait until after the draft.
We want to remind you that Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Well, Paul, speaking of free agency, the Giants had been very aggressive in the early stages of free agency, bringing in one Janoris Jenkins, and a man who has covered Janoris Jenkins with the Rams for the last few years, also covers the NFL for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, is Jim Thomas, and he's kind enough to give us a few minutes here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Jim, Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with you. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Everything's good. How are you guys?
Doing great. Very well, Jim. And let's start, obviously, with Janoris Jenkins. You followed him for the last few years. And one of the things that jumps out to me when you look at his numbers and his style of play is he was a very opportunistic corner who was able to take the ball away and also return it for touchdowns. Why did he have a knack for taking away the football and actually triggering that on points on the opposite end there?
Well, it starts with the skill, with the talent to do that. He's got very good closing speed, good anticipation. He's become a student of the game, very good note taker, a guy that may have had some off the field issues over the years, but when he shows up at Rams Park, he's all business. And so you combine all those together, and a little bit of a gambler and a risk taker. And sometimes when you do that, when you gamble for the big play, sometimes you'll guess wrong, and it'll lead to some big plays. So he has given up some big plays over the course of this time with the Rams, but he really cut down on those last year. He was a lot more disciplined, and I think part of it was just maturity, growing up as a player and a person, and I think part of it was realizing, hey, this is a contract year. I can make some money. I can be set for life. I have a good year, and so he was a lot more disciplined. He used to be very, very susceptible to double moves, and they would lead to some big plays. I think off the top of my head, I'm pretty sure only once all season did he fall victim to a double move. So again, he was a smarter player last year.
Jim, for those people who haven't gotten a chance to see him play with the Rams, they're not on TV in New York a whole lot. Are we talking about a guy who's comfortable in press coverage, who's okay if he's in man-for-man island situations? I mean, we know about his confidence. We know he does have cover skills. But, of course, every team and every coach uses players differently. They don't all use them the same way. And, obviously, you also know Steve Spagnuolo from his time with St. Louis and how he likes to play his corners.
Yes, no, he's much more comfortable, and I would say his skill set, if you will, are much more suited to man-to-man, and he's very aggressive. I guess he's average size for a corner, I guess you'd say, but he's aggressive, strong at the point of attack. I think he'd be very good in a press man-to-man system. That's not to say he can't play zone. I've seen him make some big plays in zone defense, but I think he's much more comfortable playing man-to-man defense.
Now, as a follow-up on that, Jim, sometimes guys are overly aggressive and they're risk-takers and they take gambles because they feel as though they've got to make a play because maybe the team isn't doing so well. Maybe their fellow teammates, aren't that spark, and they take it upon themselves to play outside themselves, if you will. I think you know what I'm saying. How much of that is what Jenkins did sometimes with the Rams? Did he sometimes try to do too much, and is that part of why he got the reputation about being a gambler?
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. That obviously plays into it. Now, I can't sit here and tell you, well, this particular play, he thought he needed to make something happen for the team. But, yeah, he does have some of that in him, but again, and we'll see how it is with the Giants. Maybe he'll feel more pressure because of the big contract. With the big contract come big expectations. Maybe he'll feel more pressure to make those big plays, and maybe that might lead to some mistakes. But if he carries over what he did the last season in St. Louis, I think he'll be a Pro Bowl caliber cornerback. I mean, I think he's that good, at least the way he played last year. I thought all along, even in his first couple of years, all he has to do is just turn it down just a little bit in terms of being aggressive and risk-taking. There's still times where, if your reads are correct and if you study the opponent and you know what the route is, where you can take gambles, and he still did that at times. But again, there's also this thing about playing smart, and he played a lot smarter last year.
Well, Jim, speaking of what you said in terms of his upside and him being a Pro Bowl caliber cornerback, the Rams actually had quite a difficult decision to make this offseason. They had Tremaine Johnson. They also had Janoris Jenkins. They can only give the franchise tag to one player. They obviously gave it to Tremaine Johnson. How surprising was that maneuver? And did you expect perhaps the Rams to be able to keep both of them?
they had hoped to keep both of them. I knew, and Jenkins, at least in St. Louis, he didn't give a whole lot of interviews. He's pretty media shy, but I remember I caught up with him during the bye week, which is pretty early in the season. It was about 6 weeks in, and he had said that the Rams had made an offer, and it wasn't to his liking, and that he was just going to gamble on himself, meaning gamble on free agency. So I knew then that he would probably go to the highest bidder, you know, and that's fine. I mean, this is America; it's a democracy, capitalism, so on and so forth. So I would not, if you told me before the season that they would franchise Johnson over Jenkins, I would have said, yeah, you got to be kidding. Not that Johnson wasn't a decent player or a player with potential, but Johnson really had a breakout season. You know, he tied for the NFC lead in interceptions with seven. And so I knew it was internally, it was going to be a tough decision. Someone had told me, this is right after the end of the regular season, someone in the building, you know, on the football operations side, that said that they were thinking of what I was told at the time, they were thinking of putting the transition tag on Johnson. So I knew pretty early on that maybe they were thinking more about putting the tag on Johnson. But it was a tough decision, and they were still right at the end, hoping that they were going to re-sign both. It was interesting at the NFC coaches' breakfast at the owners' meetings last week. I asked Jeff Fisher about Jenkins. He said, "You know, we're a lot closer in terms of money and in terms of him staying than people think." And right down near the end, or till the end, we thought we had a chance to keep him. And he said, kind of right at the end, the money got a little out of hand. But they made a strong effort to keep him.
Well, you know, Jim, the Giants have made it very clear that he was the corner they targeted in free agency, because they had allowed Prince Amukamara to go free agent, and he was going to be leaving. And so I ask you this, Prince was a pretty good run support corner. For those folks, again, who don't know much about Jenkins, how is he in run support? That's something the Giants certainly were happy with when Prince was here, and it's a big part of the game.
Yeah, no, he's pretty good. He's certainly not, I'm not saying he's like a headhunter at the cornerback, but he's not shy about tackling. He'll miss a tackle occasionally, but he's I would say, an above-average run defender as far as cornerbacks go. And again, not shy about sticking his nose in there. And that's something that he'd gotten a little better as the years progressed, too. So I don't know if I couldn't really compare him to what Prince Akamura was like, but, you know, he's again, he'll be a willing run defender.
Well, and part of helping in terms of being able to stop the run from a corner perspective is when you play with a pretty strong front four. And, Jim, as you know from covering the Rams, you know, the Rams had, at least on paper, a big-time front four with guys like Aaron Donald and Michael Brockers. The Giants look to beef up that front four this offseason. The fact that he's now transitioning from one team that had some big bruisers on the line to another team, how much do you think that will impact his play, perhaps help him on that end?
Yeah, well, obviously having a pass rush helps the cornerbacks, but they put a lot on Jenkins' shoulders. I mean, he would frequently get the opponent's top receiver, and the Rams played almost strictly a left and right cornerback, so it was pretty rare when they'd have him follow the guy around, but he would do that on some occasions, and that shows how much they respected him. And again, I think he'll be fine with whatever the Giants want to do, and in terms of their front four. Obviously, having a good front four helps, but part of the deal with that too is it got to the point where the Rams, where a lot of teams would just get the ball out quick. They would just get the ball out quick, and it didn't matter if you had a great pass rush or not. But I think Janoris, he'll be up to the challenge.
Jim Thomas from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch joining us. Final question from me, Jim. In terms of Jenkins maturing, you mentioned that early during our conversation. How well do you think he will fit into a Giants locker room, which is usually very well structured, very conservative? You know, this is not a locker room, although, you know, Odell Beckham has certainly been a headline grabber. I don't mean to say that he's not, but this is a locker room that usually doesn't tend towards flamboyancy. It is a rather structured situation. How well do you believe that Jenkins will be able to fit into the Giants system, so to speak, not just on the field, but as part of this organization?
Oh, I think he'll be fine. He was very well liked by his teammates, as you guys probably know by now. You know, his nickname's Jackrabbit, so not many people in terms of his teammates called him Janoris. It was either Rabbit or Jackrabbit, and a good teammate. And again, because his practice habits and his study habits are good, he's got a sense of humor about him. The big concern with him has always been the off the field issues, and we thought that what would happen if he went to a big market, and there's no larger market in the NFL than New York, you can get in trouble a lot more ways in New York City than I think you would in St. Louis. So I guess that, that bears watching in St. Louis. But you know what? He had one issue where he was benched. He and a wide receiver, Chris Givens, they were suspended for one game. I think they missed curfew or out partying or something in his rookie year, and nothing else. I mean, he's been a clean citizen as far as that. At least nothing has come out, no other discipline. So, I think he probably realized there may be a time to play and a time to work. So I can't really say that that was a problem in St. Louis. Now, with his extra money and with all the things you can do in New York, will that be temptation for Janoris? I mean, maybe so, but again, he behaved himself. He was a good citizen in St. Louis, and I think he'll be a good, he's a good presence in the locker room. He's certainly not a divisive guy by any means.
Jim, the Giants have a few Rams connections, Paul, throughout Steve Spagnuolo, who was the head coach, but the cornerbacks coach for the Giants, Tim Walton, used to be the Rams defensive coordinator, and he was the DC when Jenkins was on the team. I'm curious, from your time covering the team, how much did Walton help in Jenkins' development, and how strong of a relationship is that where they could essentially pick up where they left off?
Well, Walton was only there 1 year, so I don't know how if it was that strong. Obviously, they must have clicked because it helped get him there. And he didn't overlap with Spagnuolo because Spagnuolo was gone after 2011, and then Jenkins was part of the first Jeff Fisher, Les Snead draft class in 2012. But the Walton thing was a plus. There's no doubt about it.
Hey, aside from the you had one more?
No, go ahead.
I was actually going to ask him, a Jenkins-related question. Jim, look, I've been reading your stuff for a long time, and I know you've been covering the Rams for many years, and I think you're one of the most respected NFL writers in the country, and I just want to commend you for that. And I feel bad for you personally. I just want to say this on the air, that you're losing your team. I'm going to assume you're not going out to California to change careers or change papers. How hard is that? I mean, I've been covering the Giants now. I'm going into my 34th season. And I can't imagine if the franchise that I covered suddenly moved and I lost my beat. So I just want to give you, some heartfelt sympathy, because I think it stinks, to be honest with you. A guy in your position who's done such a great job on this team, I just think it stinks if you don't have an NFL team to cover.
Well, I really appreciate that, and I appreciate the sentiment. But I do still have a job. I'll be covering the NFL at large. Who I really feel bad for the people of this town, and they're still in shock. They're still in denial. And you can talk all you want about this being a baseball town. It's not. It's not a great baseball town. It's a great sports town, and you guys all know that from the greatest show on turf. That was the loudest building in the league. During those years, so I feel bad. They really feel like they got the rug pulled out from under them. And when you're offering $400 million in public money, plus $158 naming rights deal for the stadium, and the owner still moves, that's not enough to keep them here. And that's sad. And I think the township feels that the townsfolk feel that the NFL kind of wanted this all along. They were so anxious to get a team in LA, and they thought, okay, we lose a market in St. Louis, that's acceptable collateral damage. So I really feel bad for the people of St. Louis. If they didn't have a viable stadium plan, it'd be one thing. But that, regardless of what you may have heard or read, it was a pretty good stadium plan, a lot of public money. So while I appreciate your sentiments, I feel terrible for the people here, and they're it's going to really hit, I think, in the fall when we crank this up again. And I guess it's going to be interesting how many of them watch the Rams, and maybe some will watch the Chiefs. As you probably know, we got a lot of the metropolitan area here is on the Illinois side of the Mississippi River, so maybe some will be Bears fans. But it's going to be strange. A whole generation has come and gone with football in this town, and now not to have it.
Any Cardinals fans left in St. Louis? I mean, football Cardinals fans?
There's a few, and, you know, right to the end, it was interesting. Bill Bidwell's son, Michael, who now runs the team, he was really in St. Louis's corner. He was actively lobbying some of the neutral votes beforehand, just saying that, hey, it's not right to take a team. Now, it was a little different. You say, well, the Cardinals left. Well, there wasn't really a stadium plan when the football Cardinals left. This was different. There was a football plan. So, yeah, I think Michael Bidwell regained some fans by his staunch stand near the end, kind of pro St. Louis stand. And there are still a few Cardinal fans.
Well, Jim Thomas, we greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Glad to hear you'll still be covering the NFL, even though the Rams left town. And really, thanks so much for weighing in on Janoris Jenkins and what he's going to bring to the Giants.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it.
Take care.
All right, you got it. Jim Thomas, who covered the Rams for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Obviously, they're moving to Los Angeles. You actually took my question. That's exactly what I was going to ask. So there you go.
Sorry.
No problems. No worries. I was about to transition to that point anyway.
Well, you know, Jim's been doing that. I don't know how many years now, but, you know, being in the league as long as I have, I've kind of gotten to know the staples in each city and the guys who have been the longtime beat guys. And Jim's always done a sensational job for the Post-Dispatch. And I'm glad to hear he's still going to be on the NFL. That's good stuff.
Well, he had been covering the NFL scene, so like you said, I mean, that is a positive that at least he'll be able to cover the league as a whole, and I'm sure the Rams, now that they're in Los Angeles, he'll be crossing paths. But some good stuff out of Janoris Jenkins in terms of perhaps what he'll bring to the New York Giants. We do appreciate what Jim Thomas brought to the program. Now it's an opportunity for you to weigh in on all things related to the New York Giants, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to your calls. We'll get to your tweets. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Menno. Thanks so much for tuning in to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. AJ is in Carolina. He gets us started. AJ, what's happening?
Thanks for taking my call. That was a great interview with the Rams reporter, Jenkins.
Well, thanks so much. Appreciate that.
Him and DRC are going to be a good duo on paper.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think there's going to be a lot of folks interested in finding out which one of those two corners has more interceptions by the time the season is over, because both of those guys like to go for the ball.
Oh, yeah, very opportunistic. Johnson's numbers went through the roof this past season. I think he had 7 interceptions.
One more thing. I know the Giants are benching Ole Miss wide receiver Posset. Is it today?
Laquon Treadwell, yeah. Today is Ole Miss Pro Day, and I know there's a lot of reports that Treadwell ran the 40-yard dash for the first time, and I believe it was 4.65 was his number.
Okay. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, AJ. Thanks so much for weighing in. 201-939-4513. We have been covering a variety of different college prospects and so forth, and we'll continue to do that. I know tomorrow, Paul, you'll be focusing on defensive linemen specifically, so you'll be covering that angle, and we've had a number of other reporters who have covered some of the other top programs. We'll continue to do that all throughout the draft, and Ole Miss we're going to hit on this week now that they actually had their pro day. We've got Drew in Scranton. Drew, what's happening?
Yeah, hi. What do you say about the possibility of the Giants being like a top 10 offense, top 10 defense, and possibly making a deep run? And two, also, would it be possible for Miles Jack to fall to number 10 to the Giants? Because Miles Jack has great upside. In 2013, he won the offensive and defensive player of the year.
Newsflash, Lance. Miles Jack is a good player.
Yes, well, I think the caller would agree, obviously.
In all seriousness,
Drew, I'd be very surprised if he's there at 10. I think that a lot of teams are high on him. I agree with you. I mean, I think that the way you described this game is on point. He's extremely versatile. I don't think there's an immense amount of concerns about the injury he suffered compared to what Jalen Smith is dealing with out of Notre Dame. So I would be personally very surprised if he's around there at number 10.
Now, I agree. I think he's a top 5 prospect in my book. But let me tell you something. Just the other day, somebody sent me a Twitter message, which was a link to the Bleacher Report. And one of their guys, and Bleacher Report, as you know, they've got some pretty good guys on their staff now. You know, years ago, they were more of a fan-oriented site. Now they are truly more of a journalistic-oriented site. They did have a Bleacher Report mock draft that presented a realistic scenario, pick by pick, that actually had Jack falling to the Giants at number 10. And I was shocked.
Yeah, great.
But did you see it? And I looked at it, and you could make a case for each one of the nine picks that went before the Giants, and it was a one-in-a-million scenario. I'll be honest with you. I don't see it happening. But it wasn't totally far-fetched. And they had Jack making it to 10. I think if he's there, he's a no-brainer. I mean, let's be serious.
Well, given his upside, then, his versatility, yeah.
So do you see Laquon Treadwell maybe making it to 10 and then having a duo? Because right now the Giants don't really have a number two. Because you never know what Cruz will bring up to the table. And then with them, they can't double-team Treadwell and Beckham.
Well, Treadwell is that typical tall outside wide receiver who I think would be a good complement to what they have on the team already. It depends on whether or not the Giants want to take another wide receiver in the first round, considering they have invested in a wide receiver in recent drafts. I certainly think they could use some depth in that position. Dwayne Harris, I thought, stepped in nicely, but, you know, they want to continue to use him on special teams. And you're right, there are still question marks related to Victor Cruz. Treadwell, from a physicality standpoint, when you look at his height, his weight, I think he'd be a good fit for this team. But it really depends on, are the Giants in the mood to grab a veteran, perhaps, that's still going to be out there in free agency, or do they want to invest in a young guy? I mean, that is going to depend on the next few weeks, depending on if they make a move on the free agency front.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much for taking my call. Love you guys.
I appreciate the phone call. In terms of his first statement about the Giants being a top 10 offense and a top 10 defense, they were already a top 10 offense if you look at the numbers last season. So they're hoping to maintain that top 10 ranking. In terms of a top 10 defense, I mean, we're talking about a defense that was ranked 32nd overall last season. Can they make the jump from 32nd to 10th? Is that out of the question? It's not out of the question. I mean, we've seen defenses have turnarounds in one season. I would still, though, make an argument that, and I think the Giants would agree, that there's still work to do in terms of this defense coming together. On paper, you know, the front four looks really good, but takes more than a front four to make the jump from 32 to 10th, if we're to use what the phone caller said. So I think there's potential for them to move up in the rankings, no doubt about that. To make the jump 22 spots, I don't know right now if I'm ready to say that's going to happen.
I think if you can get somewhere into the top half, which would be 16 or up, that would be a more realistic goal and one that could make you a playoff team, quite frankly.
You don't have to be in the top 10. If you look at the teams that made the playoffs last year, I even go through, they weren't necessarily top 10 overall, Paul, but they may have been top 10 in stopping the run, or right, they may have been top 10 in sacks. There's a difference. There's one category I think you could find the trend between all the defenses that actually made the postseason. I wouldn't say, though, they all ranked overall in the top 10 in terms of yardage.
Now, turnovers is always one that you really want to have, for sure.
Turnover differential, too, a big indicator whether or not you're going to make the playoffs. Richie is on Long Island. Richie, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi. Thanks for making it, Richie. What do you have for
all
us?
All right. No, I know I'm talking about a little bit about the draft. How do you guys feel about, you know, trading down? Usually when you trade down, I guess, I don't know how it usually goes, but maybe it's 2 second-round picks that when you trade down for it?
Well, it depends on the chart. The chart that the NFL brings out, every pick has a value. So if you move down, a team would have to give you the equivalency of what the number 10 overall pick equals. So, I mean, it depends on if you're moving down from 10 to 11, it's not going to be obviously a big return. If you're moving from 10 to 25th, that certainly changes the dynamics of the trade. This is my philosophy on trading down. You have to ask yourself a question as an organization, Richie. If you have a player that's still on the board and you're ready to pick at number 10, then my argument and my answer would be go after the player if you're that high on the player. If you're not too high on the players that are left around 10, then I think there's some stock and substance in putting into the maneuver of moving down. But if you're at 10 and you think you get a quality playmaker, what's the purpose of moving down? I just don't see the pro there.
If you have I know it's only March, but for the depth factor in it, because, you know, for the recent years, but 2011 draft and 2012, there are currently no more draft picks from those years drafted.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. If you have conviction about a player at 10 and he's on the board, you have to take him or you will second-guess yourself from here to eternity. You've got to take the guy that you really are sold about. Now, if you're not really sold about a particular player and you have three or four or five guys who you feel pretty good about, well, then you could think about moving down three, four, or five spots because you'll still get one of those guys if you move down within those parameters. Now, let me explain something to you for the Giants' perspective. Looking at the NFL trade value chart, which I'm sure you can probably find on the internet. We all have an opportunity to look for that if you Google it. The NFL trade value chart. Okay, it's something that Jimmy Johnson came up with many, many years ago when he was with the Cowboys. And basically, it assigns a point value to each draft pick in the NFL draft. And it is a guideline and a basis for how teams will trade draft picks with each other if you want to make a deal. It's not in stone, but it gives you a starting point. Now, the Giants are at number 10 overall in the first round. Basically, if you're going to say to me they're going to move down anywhere between 3 to 5 spots, all the way down to maybe 15, they could demand a third-round pick, a high third-round pick as compensation in terms of swapping out maybe 3, 4, 5 spots down. To me, that is absolutely the most I would even consider moving down.
What's the difference, just going with your hypothetical, Paul? You said you move from 10 to what, 15? What's the point differential between 10 and 15?
If you go from 10 to 15, you're giving up 250 points.
And that's equivalent to a high third round.
And that would be equivalent to a top 5 pick in the third round. So that, to me, and those teams in the top 5 of the third round, are Tennessee, Cleveland, San Diego, Dallas, and San Francisco. Those teams have top 5 picks in the third round with trade value that equates to you moving down potentially a handful of spots. Now, that doesn't mean you can't come up with another type of creative trade because you can always do something else, throw in a conditional, add a fifth rounder.
A player too could be
involved. There are things you could do. But the point is, that's how the trade situation works when you're talking about picks. Personally, again, number one priority. If you're convinced about a particular player at number 10, you grab him. Case closed.
Yes. But if the player's not there that you're convinced about, then it's okay to trade back in that line of thinking. Then, if you're not fully convinced on one player, then go back a little bit further.
But here's the thing. Understanding that there are supposedly a lot of second and third round players in this draft at some positions the Giants need, it would not make sense to go down further. Because if you go down, let's say, 10 spots, now you're going to get, if you go down 10 spots, you're going to get, basically, it's not worth it. You're going to get such a late-round pick in compensation. What's the point of even moving?
I just keep hearing, this is such a deep draft in terms of, defensive and defensive linemen. The people are like, you can still get a quality player, come day two. That's why my only line of thinking, to help add to the depth of the chart, the roster through the draft, by trading back a little bit more. But if, if there was a certain player that, let's say Miles Jack, we just put false to 10, obviously, then you don't trade back, you take him.
Well, I think that clearly would put the Giants in a position where they wouldn't be itching to leave that spot. And appreciate the phone call, Richie. And in terms of the depth conversation, I always say it's substance over volume. Getting an additional pick, Paul, is great, but if it doesn't add substance to your team, what's the trade-off?
Right.
That's what it comes down to.
Look, if the Giants see a bona fide top 5 pick somehow fall to number 10, they're going to take him. And if it's Ramsey, if it's Jack, if it's one of those guys who somehow, some way, falls down to 10, you don't trade out. You just don't.
I think one of the situations that you could look at as relevance to this conversation, the Jets last season. I mean, Leonard Williams fell.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that. You're looking at the draft, you're like, wow, the Jets are there. Do they really need a defensive lineman? Maybe it's not priority number one, but he fell to them.
I flipped out. I called him the best pick in the draft, and I think a lot of people agreed with me going in. When he fell, and I said, you've got to be kidding me. Leonard Williams is there for the Jets? That is a no-brainer. absolutely no way he should have fallen to them. And when he's sitting there in their lap, they got to take him.
And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
And we could have a similar circumstance here. I always say the quarterbacks, where they go, is going to perhaps shake up the top 10, and that's good news for the Giants. The more quarterbacks that go in the top 10,
Giants
are going to have no complaints. Time will tell. I don't think Cleveland removed itself from the conversation by signing RG3. I think Dallas is still a possibility.
San Fran.
I think there's three teams that are a possibility. I'd still be surprised if all three took a quarterback. But
so would I.
The chance that two go, that still remains. It's possible.
Could be.
One, I would say, is very certain. Two, possibility. Three, maybe a stretch. Antoine's in Atlanta. Antoine, what's happening?
Oh, okay. I have a question. It's about the draft. Which position do you think, this is assuming the Giants draft on defense in the first round, which position do you think would benefit the Giants more? A pass rusher, you know, defensive end, or a corner.
The only way that I'm taking a corner at 10 is if it's Ramsey or Treadwell. The Florida guy.
Hargraves.
Okay. I drew a blank.
Yeah.
If it's Ramsey or Hargraves, I'm taking the cover corner at 10. Okay? I'm going to do that. If Ramsey and Hargraves are gone, there's not another corner in this draft worth the number 10 overall pick. Then I would be more inclined to take the pass rusher if a Shaq Lawson is available, let's say, per se. If Buckner is available, per se, I would consider taking him there, too. Although, again, a lot of people think he's going to be an inside tackle, and there's some debate as to what kind of pass rusher he's going to be. But to me, Ramsey and Hargraves are the only two top 10 corners in this draft.
Well, and the reason why I think those two are appealing, Paul, and I would agree with you, is because I would want to draft a corner. If you just look at the makeup of the roster right now, DRC and Jenkins are my two outside guys. I want a guy that's comfortable that I can move into the slot because I want to maximize the talent they have on the field at the same time.
Right.
If I draft a corner with my first-round pick, I think both of those fit that bill where you can move them and shift them around, as opposed to drafting a corner who you know you can only put on the outside. Then what are you going to do with three outside corners? So I think that would perhaps complicate matters. Under those circumstances, there's appeal for a corner. But right now, as it stands, regardless of the Giants' needs, I don't think they could go wrong with a defensive lineman. For depth purposes, for rotation purposes, with Spag's system, as it stands right now, even if they add another free agent, I would still say there's value in taking a defensive lineman.
Yeah, if those two corners are gone and they took a defensive end, I'd have no problem with that at all. And quite frankly, I've said this before. If Stanley from Notre Dame is sitting there, I got no problem with them taking a tackle. If they take an offensive tackle at number 10, you're not going to hear a peep out of me. I'll applaud. I've got no problem with that either.
Even if it's a guy who just plays on the right side.
Doesn't matter. Okay, Stanley's a stud. You know, you can never have enough.
I have one more question.
Sure.
Have you all heard of Tyler Boyd from Pittsburgh, wide receiver?
Yeah, sure. He's a second rounder, though. You don't want to take him at 10, trust me.
Oh, no, not at 10. I was thinking about maybe second or third round.
He'll be there, I think, in the second round to pick number 40. If you want to, you know, take a shot at him there, I could see that being a possibility. But I don't know if he's going to make it till pick number 71, which is the Giants' next pick in the third.
Oh.
All right, Antoine, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We'll also be checking in on Twitter. I know a lot of people are weighing in on the conversation there, so we don't want to leave you hanging. We'll get to some of your thoughts. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. So glad you could join us for Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. In the meantime, let's head back to the phones. We got Mike in Pennsylvania. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Paul. Hope you guys had a good holiday.
You too. Same to you, Mike.
I just wanted to talk a little bit about Victor Cruz and put the feelers out and see if you guys feel the same way that I do.
Okay.
We all know that Ruben Randall's in Philadelphia now, and I keep hearing people talk about Victor Cruz. You know, you don't know what you're going to get from him. The Giants can't bank on what they're going to get from him, which is true. But something in me tells me that Victor Cruz is going to have an awesome season this year because he just doesn't strike me as the type of player. Like, he made his bones in New York. And it's almost because he didn't play for a year last year that people completely forgot about him. When he took his pay cut, you know, he did it because he wanted to stay with the Giants. That was clear. And I just think he's not the type of player that's going to lay down. And I just think he's going to come back this year with something to prove. And I wonder if you feel the same way that I do. It's like the first time he got hurt in Philadelphia, I'm not exactly sure what the injury was. But it's almost like he came back from that, but then his calf is what held him back. Well, so he's actually had a complete season to heal the first injury that he had.
Well, it was the knee in Philadelphia, and then it was the calf last year during training camp. Here's the bottom line. Victor Cruz has not played in a season and a half. We got a lot of background noise, so we're going to let you go in just a second. But just to finish the answer, Victor Cruz is on schedule with his rehab. They think that all systems are go, but you can't put all your eggs in his basket and say he's guaranteed going to be the number two receiver on this team this year, because you just don't know medically how it's all going to shake down by the time he gets back on the field again. So they would love to believe that he can be that guy. And if he is and he earns it, God bless him. But right now, the Giants have to be very cautious about that, and they've got to have a contingency plan, a plan B, if you will, that somebody's going to start opposite Beckham if Cruz can't physically make it.
And, Mike, appreciate the phone call. I don't think it's ever been a question with Victor Cruz about motivation.
Right.
The question's been about health. So, I mean, Mike's point, weighing in that he thinks Victor Cruz is going to have a huge bounce-back season, I would have said the same thing last year, too, Paul.
Me, too.
The problem is the health part.
How good did he look in training camp last season?
Yeah, it looked very good.
Oh,
but
man.
But unfortunately, it was for a very small periods of time.
Yeah.
I mean, there was even optimism, Paul, if you remember when they practiced with the Bengals and he got out there for one of those practices. Hey, at least getting some physicality going with the opposition. And then, unfortunately, you know, every time it looked like he took a step forward, he would take two or three steps back. So, to me, the question is,
it's heartbreaking.
Can he preserve his body for the length of a season more so than is the motivation there? Without a doubt, the motivation is there. But you can't bank on motivation alone making sure a player plays 16 games, because health is something that can easily get in the way. So they need to protect themselves from that regard. But I never questioned the motivation factor. The concern always was, can he stay on the field?
Sure. And the Giants, again, they must have a plan B ready for somebody to start opposite Odell Beckham. Remember, Reuben Randle has gone now. He's in Philadelphia, signed a contract as a free agent. They've got to have somebody opposite Beckham, and it can't be Dwayne Harris. Dwayne Harris was signed here to be a jack-of-all-trades, but primarily a special teams demon. He's awesome as a number four receiver on a team. He's even proven that he can be a number three.
Yeah.
He can be a three, but at the expense of some of his specials. I don't think they really want to do that. I think they love having him as a special teams demon and a terrific number four. I think that's what they really want him to be. And if Cruz can be the three or the two, fine. But you got to have somebody else in here who's going to fill in that other spot. And right now, you don't know who that other guy is. Could it possibly be a Dabble? Is it Dabble? Dabble? I don't even know how
they
he pronounces his name.
From overseas.
The fellow who came over from France. I haven't met him yet. I haven't seen him yet. I've looked at some video. I don't know. Is he part of that equation, or is he Corey Washington?
Is he
a guy who's put some great stuff on tape, but when it comes to playing in the NFL – is it there? I don't know.
You know, I've heard through the grapevine that he's actually irritated. He hasn't met you yet. Forget about the fact that you haven't met him. I mean, he still is losing sleep over the fact he hasn't met you.
It'll come in due time, trust me.
Boy, will it ever. And we'll have to document it right here on Giants.com. But in all seriousness, Paul, I do think you bring up a good point in terms of there being some question marks on the back end of the depth chart. And even when you look at the current roster, I mean, there are some young guys who were on the practice squad
last year. Jeremy Davis, for example.
Well, he was on the actual roster, but I'm referring to even a Ben Edwards and a Miles White, who will probably be brought back to compete for roster spots. But once again, you're not expecting them to skyrocket up the depth chart and be that consistent weapon.
I mean, I would hope that Jeremy Davis, with a year under his belt now, is going to mature and blossom and grow a little bit and be able to be, you know, one of those guys. There's always going to be room for five. They're going to keep five. Six is where it gets a little sticky sometimes. But you know there's going to be five on the 53. So, you know, I would like to believe that, again, Jeremy Davis didn't really play last year, so nothing is willed to him. He doesn't have a right to claim a roster spot, but I'd like to believe he'll have a good camp and he will claim one of the five receiving spots. But that doesn't mean he's in contention to be the two or the three.
Well, he'd be a player that you'd want to see a significant jump from year one to year two because the opportunity is there.
Sure it
is. And we always target those players every offseason, you know, who is really in a spot where they can make a name for himself and they can claim a bigger role. And I think Jeremy Davis is one of those guys, given how you look at the receiving core right now. I mean, he was used on special teams, didn't get many opportunities in terms of his wide receiver route tree and so forth. But this offseason, I think, is going to be really big for him.
It is. But again, I think at this point, realistically, you want to see him make a jump that says, okay, you can be one of the five guys on the 53 consistently and produce if we need you to get in there. I don't think you look at him and say, you've got to jump all the way into a starter's role. That's asking too much.
Not at all. But I think it's not asking for too much if you could be that guy where somebody goes down. You feel as if, hey,
well, you're going to have to be. You're going to have to be.
That, I think,
if you're going to be one of the five on the 53, you better be able to do that, like Dwayne Harris did last season.
Correct, exactly. You want to have that depth chart come in, and then the level of productivity does not dip. I mean, that's the key to depth here, and that's what it's essentially they are in search of here during the course of the offseason. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Jeff in New Hampshire. Jeff, what's happening?
Not much. How you guys doing?
Doing well, Jeff.
Good. I want to jump in on that caller that mentioned the trading back. I had a couple of thoughts on that. The first thought was I probably don't think it's going to happen because you got to remember with trading back, you need a team that wants to move up and is going to give up something to make it worth it. I would trade back for a second-round pick, and I'll get into why in a minute. But you got to remember we're going to need a team that's going to want to do it. Who's the player that they're going to want to move up and take? And if a player falls to number 10 that's good enough to want to trade up for, we should take him. So, you know, say a Miles Jackson now falls. You know what I mean? So somebody's going to want to do it to make it happen. I mean,
hold on now.
You can just say,
hold on now. There may be somebody who wants Ezekiel Elliott per se. Now, let's just say he drops to 10. Jerry's phone could ring. Jerry Reese's phone could ring. And somebody who really wants that running back might just call him. And if the Giants per se say to themselves, well, we don't think Elliott's a top 10 guy, and, you know, we also don't want the running back, maybe the price is too much for him to turn down. That could happen. Elliott's one of those guys
who
somebody might want to jump up for. That's possible.
Someone might. I don't see Elliott getting past the Eagles.
I don't think he does either. I don't think he get. There's a chance. There's very good chance that the Eagles take him. I agree with you. But
they've traded Murray. They're trying to trade Matthews. I think they're stupid if they don't take Elliott.
I agree with you.
I think if he's there at 10, we should take him. But I see what you're saying. There is a chance.
There's a chance because I think there are a cluster of about 12 to 15 guys in this draft who some team could say he's a must-have. I think there are that
many. That's kind of my point about the next tier of players. That's why I would consider trading back. If you look at the tiers in this draft, the top tier, you got the Jacks, the Ramseys, the Bosas. We're not getting one of those guys unless something crazy happens.
Right.
You look at the next few tiers of players, and it's all within the eye of the beholder. If you look at the 150 mock drafts that are out there, they're all so different. Everybody's top five is pretty much the same. You got Bosa, Ramsey, Jack, a quarterback, and you got Tunzel. After that, everybody's value of these players is so different. I don't know if anybody really separates themselves between the 10 and the 20.
Well, I think from 5 to 15, I think for me, is kind of the next level. And I think from 15 then down, the latter half of that first round, I think then that's the third level. At least as I'm looking at it, I haven't done all of my – I mean, I started digging this past week. I got a lot more to go before we actually get to the draft. But I understand your point. There's clearly an upper tier, a penthouse, if you will, of five guys. I get you.
And then after that, I think they're very similar. Like what I was saying, I saw Shaq Lawson in one mock draft. He was in everybody's draft for a while. I just saw him going in like the late 20s.
Oh, that's
crazy. I've seen a player,
that's crazy,
I know. But I'm saying every scout is viewing these players differently. So that tells me a lot of these, none of these guys are necessarily a home run. I've seen Darren Lee go at 11. I've seen him go in the late teens. Kevin Dodd, Mark Wilson, another one. He could go in the 20s.
Yeah, the rankings are fluctuating, Jeff. I would agree with you there. But all it takes is one team that has a guy extremely high on their list and the rest of the teams don't, and they may be willing to move up. That's all it takes.
There are two guys who I see the biggest wide range or spectrum being talked about in the first round. That would be Spence and Ogba. Those two guys. And by the way, Ogba's a guy we're going to be talking about tomorrow. We're talking defensive line tomorrow. We got a couple of beat guys on tomorrow to discuss a couple of the defensive linemen. So that's going to be a really good program as well. But Ogba and Spence are the two guys that I have seen wide, wide ranges of picks on, as high as maybe even in that top 10, but also guys who think, you know what, he should be bottom of the first round, maybe even second round if you really don't like him that much, because they got enough
flags. Well, Spence, a lot of that's the character.
No question, no question. But those are the two guys who seem to be huge hit-and-miss guys that I seem to be seeing a lot of.
Well, and Randy Gregory, for example.
He was a hit-and-miss guy.
I mean, I think that's a good one that you can relate. On some draft boards, he was through the roof. On others, you know, all of a sudden they were concerned.
Mostly off the field.
Correct. And reports are going to come out as we get closer and closer to the draft. That also could impact
where
the player goes.
So I hear what you're saying. You make a good point, but ultimately, again, and Carla, I hate to repeat, but it's true. If the Giants have strong conviction on a guy at 10, they got to take him. Don't even think about trading back.
I wonder if there's going to be that guy there, but again, we don't know how to, you know, just because scouts see a player a certain way, that's not necessarily, or the reporters, I should say, that's not necessarily how our guys see it. So they could be really high on somebody where, you know, the guys publishing mock drafts aren't necessarily, we might see something different. So it's all going to be what they see. I just feel like talent-wise, you could give me 10 different players at number 10, and I'm going to be happy with it. If I woke up tomorrow and the draft was tonight and you told me we got Stanley, we got Treadwell, we got Lee, we got Raglan, we got Lawson. I mean, a handful of guys. I'm not going to be mad about any of those picks.
Yeah,
I wonder, are they worth it at 10, or could we get them at 15 or 16? But are we going to get a deal to make that worth it?
It's going to be tight. I think if you have conviction, look, if Hargraves is there, I'm going to take a cover corner at 10. I'm not going to have a problem with that. And if you
think he's going to be there.
Well, and if you trade back, you're not getting him. Trust me, you're not.
We'll see. I know Tampa Bay's pretty high on Hargraves, so I'd be very interested to see if they actually take him right before the Giants potentially have the 10 spot. Be cautious of that. And, Jeff, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in.
Thanks,
now, one thing to add, we still don't know what the Giants are going to do in free agency going in because, quite frankly, I still think they need a veteran free safety. I still believe in that. I still believe they'd be better off also signing a veteran offensive tackle, which in my mind, you know, would alter a little bit that equation because I do think the need component is part of what they think about. We know they like best player available, but the need component's part
of
it.
Can't overlook that.
And quite honestly, if there was a stud offensive lineman that they were still able to bring in, and there are some names being talked about that are still under contract to other teams, if that should happen, then, for example, Stanley is probably not on my list at 10. Right now he is. Stanley's a consideration for me at number 10 right now. It would not be if they were able to get a veteran offensive lineman, a tackle, before the draft. So let's make it clear, there's still some fluidity here. The other thing is, too, in looking at the number 10 pick overall, the Giants, in my mind, you know, they've always operated under, let's get a cluster together of five guys who we think can be available. That's the way their MO always has been. That's the way they work. No matter where they're picking, they say, let's put together a cluster of about five guys who we think are going to be there, who we're going to be happy with. And then if somebody suddenly falls out of the blue, many years ago Rodney Hampton did. Rodney Hampton was supposed to be like a top six pick on their board.
And then guys drop.
And suddenly, down near the end of the first round, Rodney Hampton's sitting there. And they're saying to themselves, look at this. Here's our cluster, and here's Rodney Hampton who dropped. Wow, we got to take him. Understand, that's the way the Giants operate. If somebody from out of the blue drops down out of the sky, they're going to take him. And it doesn't matter what we think about positional need.
Because it's just an overwhelming amount of talent to pass up.
Correct.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to. Remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Let's head back to the phone lines as we move along here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Bill is in Phoenix. Bill, what's happening?
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Bill.
Hey, I'd like to talk about last year at this time. What I was hearing is that we had to get like three starters for our draft to be successful. And even the trade that they made, it seemed to, you know, reinforce that they moved up in the second to make sure they got a starter there and draft somebody really good at the top of the third to get a starter. But anyway, it didn't work out because of the, Dublow getting hurt.
He was injured. That is true.
You got two starters in your first two round picks.
Right. I'm not hearing that this year.
Well, what do you mean you're not hearing it? Meaning from the speculation, the media?
From the media or from the people saying that we need three starters for this draft to be a success. You know, we got to get three.
Well, I don't think that you ever necessarily need an X amount of players to be starters. I want playmakers out of the draft. I mean, to calculate and say we need three starters for our draft to be successful, you want playmakers. You want impactful players. If that guy's going to impact special teams, so be it. If that guy is going to be a situational linebacker, so be it. If he's going to be a third down running back specialist, so be it. Impactful is different than necessarily who starts. Plus, there are some times where you're going to start an alignment because of what the offense is going out and doing. And that player may play more snaps than a guy that actually starts in the game. So I don't necessarily put a great deal of stock in. You need three starters, guys that are going to play all 16 games and go down in the book as having 16 starts next year.
Because of the way sub-packages work and the way rotational packages work, what I like to say is you need, let's just pull a number out of the hat, six guys who can make an impact on your roster. Now, it doesn't matter. Look, I'll give you a great example. A third down pass rusher is not a starter, but he can have a huge impact on your team. So if you want to tell me that the Giants need to get six guys who are going to be at least rotational players and have an impact on their roster this year, I accept that. That's the kind of statement you have to make. You don't have to necessarily say they're starters.
Okay, guys.
I mean, for instance, a nickel has a huge impact on your team. He's not a starter.
More often than not, you're going to have one less linebacker on the field.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. What do you have?
I was going to say, too, another point I like to make was that I'm really starting to like Zach Conklin from Michigan State. I'm hearing a bunch of good stuff about him. I'm thinking one of the Giants' weakest points were in the run game with third and one and fourth and one. They never got any movement, and this kid looks like he's going to do something in that area.
Bill, you're singing my song. I want more help along that offensive line for the run game specifically. I think Conklin, for me, would be a sensational second-round pick for the Giants at 40 if they don't get one through free agency or the first round. The problem is, and Lance and I were talking about this with one of our employees here at the Giants earlier, he's probably moving up now into the late first round, and I don't think he's going to be available at 40.
Well, I was going to say, you threw out 40. There's mock drafts on our website that have him going potentially 10 to
the
Giants. Yes, he's really moving up.
Yeah.
He's no longer, to me, a second-round pick. I'd be surprised if he lasts that
long. Because there are some people who think he's going to be a better right tackle in the pros, and some people still think he's going to be a left tackle in the NFL. I like him at right tackle, which is why I thought they may be able to get him at 40. But as we're getting closer to the draft, it's apparent he's moving up.
Well, you know what? I like a tackle that can play both sides. How about that?
That's fine.
I'll take that, Paul. I think you'd settle on that, no?
Yeah.
I mean, forget right or left. I'll take a guy that I can move back and forth. Makes no difference. What else you got, Bill?
That's about it, guys. I just love your show. Thanks a lot for taking my call.
Well, we appreciate you making the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Let's check in on Twitter here before we wrap up the show. I know a lot of people wanting to weigh in on a variety of different prospects. We have been focusing a lot in on the draft, and we certainly thank Jim Thomas again for weighing in on what Janoris Jenkins is going to bring to the Giants, as he covered the Rams for many different years. Ben?
Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Let's see here what we got. Normally you want to overlap, but Eli has 3 to 5 years left. Need one now to pair with Odell Beckham. Go all in, referring to another wide receiver to add into the mix, whether it be obviously through free agency or the draft. It didn't look like Ben specified. I believe, though, he was just talking about getting another playmaker to complement Odell Beckham because of the window for Eli Manning here.
You know, there seems to be, again, a differentiation between the top couple of receivers in the draft and then the guys who are on the next level. It's funny because the next level guy might be a guy like Fuller out of Notre Dame who ran sub-4.3.
It's true. Well, because it could be one of those types of drafts.
And what if I said to you they got Fuller at pick 40? Would you be okay with that?
I think most people would be okay with that. Correct. Well, and that goes to show what a lot of the callers have been weighing in, and we've talked about this. With so much depth on defense specifically in this draft, I would argue, as opposed to perhaps what the offense has to offer, there's a chance that there could be a second-round pick that really has first-round type of value because of so many options. It's possible.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean
you
it's going to translate to the NFL. But right now, I think it's possible that maybe your second-round pick could be so impactful that it's like a similar first-round pick.
Here's the good news, okay? They don't need a number one wide receiver. they can afford to maybe go in the second or third round to grab somebody, even a fourth round to grab somebody who may be a potential starter. Because when you're looking to get the number one wide receiver on your team, a lot of times you got to use a first round pick to get him.
And there have been a number of playmakers that have gone in the first round in recent years in the draft. But at the same time, there's, for example, a Stephon Diggs.
Sure.
For the Minnesota Vikings, who was a late-round pick. So I think there's evidence to say, Paul, you're right. Fourth round, nobody's saying you can't get a guy that could be your number two wide receiver.
I would take his clone.
I would take that, too, if you get, especially with value in the fourth or the fifth. If you could turn, and this goes for any team, if you could turn a fourth or a fifth-round pick into a starting number two wide receiver, I think you did justice for yourself there.
No doubt.
In the draft. Well, we certainly appreciate everybody for weighing in on social media as well as on the phone lines. Big Blue Kickoff Live, as you know, with you each and every weekday as we take you through Monday through Friday. And we'll continue to focus in on the draft as the pro days happen. We'll have a focus in on a number of the different prospects. You're going to focus in on the defensive line
tomorrow. Defensive line tomorrow. We'll talk about Rankins and Ogba, again, one of the mystery guys coming out in this draft who some people have him real, real high. Others have him a little bit lower. So I'm interested to hear what we can get about him.
So we'll continue to focus on the draft. Hope you enjoy the rest of your Monday. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Benno. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
He's got through. 35, 30.